One of WAER's reporters got a chance to visit a refugee camp in Greece and bring back the stories of the refugees, what they endured, and why they fled. Anjali Alvis accompanied a medical mission by the Syrian American Medical Society. We start a six-part series today, Six Degrees of Separation, that will air each Thursday on WAER. Anjali introduces us to some of the refugees, as well as doctors and volunteers trying to help.
No one leaves home unless home is the mouth of a shark. You only run for the border when you see the whole city running as well. Your neighbors running faster than you, breath bloody in their throats. The boy you went to school with who kissed you dizzy behind the old tin factory is holding a gun bigger than his body. You only leave home when home won't let you stay. Picture a refugee camp in Thessaloniki, Greece. You can't? I couldn't either before I spent 10 days there volunteering with SAMS, the Syrian American Medical Society, which is an organization that provides medical care for refugees. There are about 50,000 to 60,000 refugees in Greece alone. The three camps that I worked in, which were some of the better ones, housed only a few thousand. The Greek government and military have done their best to provide safe and livable spaces for refugees. The camps are located in abandoned warehouses in remote areas, and each refugee family gets a tent about 10 by 10 feet in size. Everything they own is in that tent. There's water and three military-prepared meals a day. Some camps even have a school for the children. The people are free to leave the camp, but without a car and without money, there's very little they can do. The people are strong, some of the most resilient I've met in my life. Capable of crossing countries under attack and threat, carrying small children through long miles and dangerous boat rides, people that have seen more and done more than most will see or do in a lifetime. And now, they're in Greece, so close to the end, and everyone is forced to simply wait. But before the war, and before all of this, most people in Syria were happy.
Then the way of living there, I lived it was really amazing because we were living in a neighborhood like with a lot of people. And we were always like kind of kids, like actually they were there more than 100 kids. We were always like a lot of kids and a lot of friends. We are just going there to entertain, not to fight for something. What are you going? Then that was really cool.
Meet Abdulaziz. He's an 18-year-old boy from Homs, Syria, who currently lives in the refugee camps in Greece. He has a bright smile, a contagious laugh, and is an absolutely brilliant artist. Let me explain how I met Abdulaziz. He was working as a translator for SAMS, the Syrian American Medical Society. But he wasn't introduced to me as simply a translator. Countless people had told me beforehand that there was a boy I had to meet who was a brilliant photographer and talented digital artist. He ran his own Facebook page called Through Refugee Eyes, which had over 2,000 likes. But more on that later.
It's a wonderful city because like the way of living there, I didn't see it. I left a lot and I lived in a lot of places. And until now, I'm just like 18 and I really lived in a lot of places. And I'm going to see more and more for sure. But I didn't see something like Homs.
Abdulaziz has lived in a lot of different places in his short 18 years. When he was 12, he changed schools four times in Syria. But not for the reasons you think. He changed schools because of a girl.
I was really like good in the school and I was like the best student. When I left all the like the teachers, why? Because for 2 years I was really in a lot of troubles. And yeah, there were three. And in the beginning one of them he's in love with this girl. There's like, what's that? You're in love with her, that's not my problem. Then that was really bad because in a lot of time they were like kind of fighting. Then I left from the school. And I've gone to another school. And in this second school it was good.
Unfortunately, his reasons for moving after that weren't quite so innocent and funny. The war began in 2011 when the dictatorial government of Bashar al-Assad fired into a peaceful protest. As the protest continued, they started to become violent and a group broke off from the military to form the Free Syrian Army. Civil war had officially broken out in Syria. Since then, the war has only escalated, and the civilian population has been stuck between the regime, rebel groups, and extremists facing attacks, chemical weaponry, and mass executions. hundreds of thousands of Syrians have died in the country, and millions more have been forced to leave their homes. The attacks still continue.
This is the worst thing, actually, to feel like you're a refugee from your beginning. For me, it was like the revolution. It was started when I was like in middle school. When I was feeling free a little bit, like I just moved to another school. It's in the city. I was going there. I have a lot of friends there. We were going around. We did like kind of football team. We did a lot of things in that year, the same year. Then the war started. Then our school, it was one of the school, like, it was nothing from the beginning. They just arrested a lot of, like, students because we just were and we just supported the revolution.
Many towns in Syria experienced this same transition from bustling metropolis to mass grave. Just like Abdulaziz, Nasreen watched her home and city crumble in front of her eyes. Nasreen is a pseudonym. She did not want me to use her audio or her real name, but gave me permission to tell her story. Here is Wynne Howard reading her story.
I am from Qamishli, a beautiful touristy city even bigger than Damascus. My husband's job is in Homs, where we lived with our family. We had two houses near Damascus, an apartment in Qamishli and one in Homs. We were very well off. We had a car, and my husband was employed at a tile company. I was a teacher for students first through sixth grade. When the crisis started, the whole town of Homs was destroyed. The area we were in was very heavily militarized. We prayed for the bombing to stop for 5 minutes so we could sleep. It never did. The military would sometimes fight within itself. It was especially terrifying when dissenters tried to leave. The military snipers would shoot them. We would hide away from the windows to avoid being shot. We would even refuse to go to the refrigerator to get food because it was near a window. Outside, people would cry and scream, but we were too scared to open the door, so we would have to listen to the screams for help. The next day, we would open our doors, and there would be dead bodies everywhere. The military would sometimes come clean them up. But we got used to it. The kids would play outside, even with bullets whizzing by. At the beginning, we would send the kids to school, but we stopped after a while. In order to get to school, the school bus would have to pass through military checkpoints and have their bags searched for bombs. The kids had witnessed people being shot at the checkpoints, and during school, they would hear bombs dropping and see smoke. The children had nightmares so bad that we had to stop sending them. One day, the military came to town and did a search of every house. They said if anyone looked at them, they would be hit with a rifle. They took half the men away, anyone who was Arab Sunni. Had it not been for God, we would have been dead too. One day, they did a raid on my husband's company and took 15 men and put them in the trunks of cars. There was one man who I liked a lot and was very overweight. He did not look like he would fit into the car, but they pushed conceiving for a long time, but finally had two little girls. The husband had been taken in a military raid. When I went to her home and informed her, the woman fainted. I felt so sad, I invited the woman to live with my family. The situation got really bad. At night, we traveled to my sister's house, and during the day, we would return to Homs. I felt responsible for the woman with the missing husband and wanted to help her as well. Every day, she would cry. We all knew that when people were taken in military raids, they were slaughtered. The wives of missing men would come into town every day trying to find their husbands. We all knew that their husbands were dead, but we didn't want to break the news to them. We decided we had to tell them so that they could try to find the bodies. One day, I got a phone call to evacuate the city. We had half an hour. They told everyone if they found us, we would be killed in front of our spouse and children. We did not pack anything, we just ran.
WAER's Anjali Alvis reporting. Future segments of 6 Degrees of Separation will be featured each week here on NPR One. You can see photos of Anjali's experience on our website, waer.org, and also hear the installments each week.